You're listening to Vatican Radio.
South Sudan's President Salva Kiir called for a national day of prayer for peace and forgiveness on the 10th of March and urged citizens to turn out in high numbers. Renewed political tensions and violent clashes between government forces and the opposition have resulted in tens of thousands of vulnerable people fleeing their homes and their lands. A famine was recently declared in some states, and an estimated 7.5 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance. Meanwhile, Pope Francis has said he is studying the possibility of an ecumenical visit to war-torn South Sudan, together with the leader of the Anglican Church, Archbishop Justin Welby. And on the ground, churches of different denominations, including the Catholic and Anglican churches, which count the largest followings, are urging the people to put aside differences and commit to dialogue on nation building. Franciscan Father Michael Perry, Minister General of the Order of the Friars Minor, has just returned from the South Sudanese capital, Juba. He spoke to me about the impact a visit by the Pope would have, and he explained that the church-driven process for peace-building and reconciliation is firmly rooted in Sudanese soil.
I think we're at a moment right now where people are certainly confronting life and death. They're confronting hope and despair, although I think in general the people are still hopeful, because what I find in the South Sudanese, whatever particular affiliation, religious affiliation they have, my experience with them is they are people who are resilient. They're not forever resilient because of the conditions really can wear them down, but I think they would very much appreciate, I think they're praying for a visit. And I think what's important is what the Pope said. The Pope said, if I come, it would be very important that I come with the Archbishop of Canterbury, because these are the two significant churches in South Sudan. And I think the ecumenical witness to demonstrate that we can live even though we have differences, even though we are not all the same, that we don't share necessarily the same roots, ethnic roots, that we don't share the same identical religious convictions, but that this would be a tremendous witness, and I think it would be a sign of hope and perhaps even an invitation to all leaders and to all people involved who have the possibility to construct a nation for peace. Perhaps this would be also a moment for them, a moment when they could stop and take account of what's going on.
He was actually answering a question that regarded the vitality of young churches and how ecumenism is especially forceful. How do the churches work together in South Sudan?
Very interesting. Since the 1960s in Sudan, the churches have had a particular relationship. It's gone through vagaries. It's had moments when it's been stronger and weaker for different reasons, internal to each of the churches, the Christian churches, and also dependent on the situation in general, the social climate, where there's violence, more violence or less violence. But I think right now the ecumenical relationship between the churches is strong. And I think that they've come out with a plan, an action plan for peace, which has three components to it. The first component is creating neutral spaces for dialogue. These neutral spaces are to go to local communities who are traumatized, who are living through what's happened to them in terms of war and conflict, what's happened to them in terms of the displacements, what's happened to them in terms of loss of beloved, to neighbors, friends, and what's happened to them in terms of the actual, we can say, the famine right now that's sweeping the country because of the displacement, because of the lack of security. People have not been able to plant and harvest as they would, plus the climate change, which is also demonstrating an impact in South Sudan. So I think that the Christian churches have renewed their relationship. They've strengthened it. And I think this new plan that they're calling the Action Plan for Peace, it's got legs, it's got feet, it's not just the ideas that talk and talk, but really creating these spaces for dialogue at the local level, even with local chiefs, leaders, different groups of women, children, people of all ages, to try to get people to begin to talk about what is bothering them, what has happened to them, to begin to deal a little bit with the trauma that they've experienced, and to shed light, the light of faith on that trauma, so they recognize much as probably the disciples after the resurrection, after the death and resurrection of Jesus, realized that they weren't alone, and the more they talked about it, the more they discovered commonality. I think this is what the churches are about, and that's the first part, the neutral territory, the neutral spaces. The second is advocacy, so to try to take the message of what's going to come out of these dialogues at the local level, dialogues that search for peace, reconciliation, to recreate humanity at the local level, and then to take the points of that and to present those at the international level so that appropriate measures can be taken to help the government achieve what it's promised to do in the Constitution and what it's renewed through the different processes of peace. And finally, that all of this would contribute to a groundswell of desire, the search for reconciliation among the people.
This plan has been embraced by the government itself, if I'm not mistaken.
It has, although we have to keep in mind that the government had to come up with a kind of its own plan as well, its own plan for reconciliation. And so the role of the churches, they felt that they also needed to have a plan that would accompany and that could actually reinforce anything that the government might try to do. One of the beliefs being that the church leaders, the church at the local levels, they're the ones who have tremendous contact. And in general, because of their long-standing relationship and because of the nature of it being a faith community, there's a trust level that's there that creates possibility perhaps to go even a little deeper, only because people have lived for so long in an atmosphere of mistrust. And I think that this APP is to accompany the national process for dialogue and for reconciliation.
So they're well aware that the church is a very important partner in building a common good in the country.
I think that the one thing that's been demonstrated throughout the history of the conflicts going back to 1956 when it began, but at least to 1960 and onwards, the different leaders who were involved with the struggle were accompanied by people of the church. People of the church were there praying with the communities. They were accompanying, even at times, praying for those who were involved directly in the struggle, praying for peace, that there could be a peaceful solution, even encouraging the movement to continue, not necessarily with violence, but to search always to try to bring about the conditions for a permanent peace. And I think that the role of the church was absolutely essential leading up to, in 2011, with the founding of the new nation. And I think the role of the church internationally as well, the churches internationally, throughout the whole peace process, the Catholic Church in the United States, with ecumenical partners, we were deeply involved through every stage of the peace process. And so I think, keep in mind, the government knows the role of the church, that the church has played, and also knows that the church has this link with the people. I just pray that the government can come perhaps to appreciate a little bit more and continue to work more closely with the churches in promoting this process of peace, the dialogue, and the search for the common good.
Speaking to the Bishop of Ye, he was pointing out that the first thing a man of the church does is to try and save lives as well. And he was referring directly to the famine and to the fact that Pope Francis made an appeal just last week asking for concrete aid in some of the worst stricken areas. Do you know if people are finally beginning to take notice?
I think that the international community was already aware of this. The United Nations is present on the ground, its mission there, and it's been pleading at the level of the United Nations, the international community, through the World Food Program and other tools that has at its availability, talking directly with governments. So there's the international community has been searching to do three things, I think. Number one, to respond immediately to the crisis. Number two, to encourage the government to, together with everyone on the ground, to try to stabilize the situation, search for peace and dialogue. And then eventually to help the people, I would hope, be able to return to their homes and to their fields where they'd be able to cultivate. Some of this is not going to change the course. This is where the difficulty, because we have an intersection here of human elements contributing to a crisis, but also there's a contribution to the natural environment as well, this moment when there's been a tremendous dryness. There's been lack of rains sufficient to be able to maintain conditions for good agricultural production. So I think there's human instability, insecurity, and the natural the situation with the climate. These three things have kind of come together in a tsunami type effect. But I think the people are grateful for what the Pope has asked for. It complements other activities that are ongoing, and I hope that the government will continue to allow food aid to be able to get to the people who are most in need.
You were speaking of a very resilient people, although traumatized. Every time I go to Africa, it strikes me how welcoming they are, notwithstanding the huge problems they have.
I think the one word that stands out that repeats itself in all the languages of South Sudan, no matter when you've arrived, if you've been there for a short time and when you're leaving, and it is the word welcome. Welcome, welcome. This is a word that is very powerful, I think, in the different identities, the different ethnic groups in South Sudan, the whole call to be a people of hospitality. Although having said that, it becomes very difficult to be a person of hospitality if you don't have a home. If you're living in a camp, POC, the protection camp for civilians, if you're on the run, if you're living in northern Uganda, the government has been very helpful there in Uganda, but at the same time, the conditions are dire even in the camps. If they return to the Republic of Sudan, to Khartoum and to Omdurman, where they have no idea what the conditions will be from day to day, because they have not been felt welcome there, but they don't see other options. If they return to Kakuma in northern Kenya, the government of Kenya has been most welcoming over the years, but the conditions are extreme. I talked to a person of the church who's working there, and he told me that people are coming back, but they're coming back with a sense, a little bit of exhaustion, existential exhaustion. They have no more energy to run. And I think this is something, and the people even who are staying, who have not left, is simply, I think, in part because they are just exhausted. So I think that while the welcoming continues, while the hospitality will always be there, I think that there's also an edge right now. And people don't know how, they'll continue to welcome as they have, always have, but they're getting to the point where they have, other than themselves, they have nothing else to offer. Because every time they have to run, they lose everything.
So it's a defining moment, really.
I see it's a defining moment, but again, back to the resilience, it's defining in this moment, I think. But this is why it's so urgent that absolutely every effort be made, even as the food support comes in, but every effort be made by the government, with the help of the church and churches and the different other groups, and even the Muslim presence, the small Muslim presence in South Sudan, but even they make their contribution, that everyone with the international community really focus on what is it that's going to take to be able to arrive at a sustainable peace that is just, a sustainable peace that is human, that gives dignity to people, and that will guarantee in some way the rights for all people to participate in the shaping of this new experiment called South Sudan. It is a new experiment if you look at the existence of all the nations. So they need space, they need time, but certainly I think the government needs all the direct encouragement it can get from the international community, and I hope it will be willing to take advantage of all the offerings that are being made to be able to pursue a course where all people will feel included. It will be an inclusive government of peace and stability for all the people of South Sudan and for the region.
That was Franciscan Father Michael Perry, Minister General of the Order of the Friars Minor.